Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello, it's us again. Once again, I am at Maggie's house and this time have been just handed three little pieces of plastic words which her mother had randomly sent her and kind of slightly gone off on one. They're
quotations, they're prayers, they're Christian prayers from her church, and she says she's got no use for them, so she sent them to me.
Okay, so I picked one up. I don't know if you've noticed, but they've got prayers on either side.
Anyway, oh, no, I hadn't.
I picked one up and it says, "Teach us, good Lord, to serve you as you deserve, to give and not to count the cost, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest, to labour and not to ask for any reward, save that of knowing that we do your will." And I've just noticed that it says after Ignatius of Loyola, 1556. So it's not actually something that he said. But anyway, I immediately went off on one because there in a bloody, what is that? 6 lines written on a piece of paper is everything that's wrong, in my opinion, with the teachings of some versions of Christianity.
Very tactfully put, madam.
Thank you. I believe Ignatius of Loyola to be the founder of the Jesuits. I know the Jesuits are quite hard line.
Yes, it's the same old thing where something starts off with the spirit of the law and gets bound into the letter of the law. He did say and do some good stuff, but yes, he was tough. And that is, I actually agree with you. That was the kind of thing that used to frighten me as a child. And I actually started to live it. I became totally codependent. To give and not to count the cost. To fight and not heed the wounds. To toil and not seek for rest. Well, if you don't seek for any rest, A, you're a slave. And B, you're going to get knackered and your help is going to be of no use whatsoever.
Well, and... the way we do something is the way we do everything. Yeah. I haven't said that for ages now.
Or at least three sessions.
And so if we are fighting and not heeding wounds, toiling and not seeking for rest, labouring and not asking for reward, we're giving and not counting the cost. I don't actually have any argument with giving and not counting the cost, or except that if we then expect the earth to give and not to count the cost, which we do in the way we live, all of those things, if we're doing that to ourselves, we're doing that to our earth, which we are.
Yeah.
And we're doing it to each other and to all of the rest of what lives. And that is, frankly, an abominable way to live.
It is. And also, I know there are times in my life when I have done what I could to give and I've got knackered and I've walked away to replenish myself and the other person has come and shouted at me for it.
Mm.
Which meant I didn't walk away soon enough. Because I didn't replenish myself soon enough. And it is contrary to the basic teachings of the Bible, if you actually know how to read this dratted book. But we don't know how to read this dratted book, and we forget the fact that Jesus got annoyed when he'd gone away to replenish himself, and people turned up demanding healing. And he did show up and do the healing, but he didn't come to a very good end. No, I'm sorry, that's me being facetious. He did. Well, never mind. Toxic Christianity, like toxic Islam, toxic Judaism, toxic Hinduism, toxic masculinity, toxic femininity, is when it becomes rules.
Yeah.
There are days you can't. And I get this too with people talking about fighting cancer. There was a lady who's an acquaintance of mine through spiritual work who died of breast cancer recently. And everybody's going on about what a wonderful woman she was and how marvellous and how giving and how loving and how kind and nothing was too much for her and and she said to me herself that even when she was getting chemotherapy, she was doing angel card readings for the nurses and stuff like that. And I wanted to go, stop the fuck giving. Your whole issue is, your whole value is based on what you give to others. This is why you are sick, my love, because you have not taken care of you.
Mm.
You don't know how to take care of you, and you can't really. So it's really quite difficult for me to see, oh, you know, she get, and you see this with so many eulogies. They gave everything. They were so kind. They never counted the cost. They never stopped. They were always campaigning, and they're dead.
Mm.
Now, dead isn't bad.
No.
We're all going to do it.
Definitely. But dead before your time.
Yes, but it's perhaps. All this, you know, you're loving, you're wonderful, and it's terrible that you're dead. Are we not seeing a pattern here?
Mm.
Yeah, so I can't stand up and praise any of these. My main issue with them, however, is they're all laminated, so I've got plastic to deal with.
Yes. Oh, dear. Yeah. Yes, the universe is giving you one piece of plastic after another.
I mean, they're all, they keep me from falling into sin or running into danger. That's one of the things in the Lord's Prayer that a lot of people can't quite have. They think of, lead us not into temptation. Why would God lead you into temptation? Please keep me away from it. Keep me away from the sin. No, actually, you've got to learn how to deal with it.
Mm. Yeah, because if you're never led anywhere, then you're never going to learn.
Yeah. And one of my school teachers said it should be, leave us not in temptation. I quite like that. But God never leaves us anyway. Spirit never leaves us. We leave it.
Yeah.
And temptation gets us running away from it as fast as possible.
And yet we also don't, because that's, you know, another broken story of separation, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's here all the time. We are it.
Yeah.
It is us.
Christianity is a broken story, generally. It could not be used by the American right the way it's being used at the moment if it wasn't a broken story.
Mm.
It simply couldn't, because... I'll quote the guy. Love, the Holy One, whatever your perception of it is to be, with all your heart and all your soul and with all your strength and all your might. And that means using discernment to find out what your relationship with the Holy One is. Because you and the Holy One, whatever you conceive it to be, your relationship's unique and vital. And if you take somebody else's interpretation of what that relationship might be, it's not a relationship.
Is therefore one of the fundamental problems with it. Because so that statement, if you include all that is within what you mean by the Holy One, so nobody could ever possibly argue with that. And so is that where, is the story of separation what's gone wrong with Christianity?
Yes, because people don't add the bit that says, and your neighbour as yourself. Your neighbour as yourself. You are not separate.
Mm.
You know, there is a slight implication that the divine is separate, but... He was trying to redress a Judaism which law had become more important than spirit. And you've got to use communication that bridges the gap. And it's absolutely, I'm sure now there was a meme on Facebook last week. If only Jesus could be the secret boss in churches. You know, the undercover boss. I know perfectly well that if Jesus came to the church services, I do. He'd be going, point of ego, Maggie. Not got that bit right. I mean, he wouldn't do that, but he would be looking at me and going, why are you being sanctimonious in a pulpit?
Are you sanctimonious
in a pulpit? Well, I try not to be, but I'm sure I get it wrong quite a lot of the time, which is why I always say to congregations, I'm not here to tell you what to think. I am here to tell you to think.
Yeah, invite you to think.
Yes, but that thing, your neighbour as yourself, there is no separation. And the way Christianity and a lot of other religions may also apply, works is to separate. Separate the good from the bad, the sacred from the non-sacred.
And in terms of its history, how far back does that come? I mean, that's...
313.
313.
The adoption by Rome became another... another religion of Rome, which was the Roman religions where you had to sacrifice to the gods for the gods to be nice to you, because the gods were not nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody pretended the gods were nice. Whereas Jesus comes along and says, actually, you know, God's really nice.
Yeah.
And everybody went, oh, no, he can't be, because he can be nice to me because I'm good, but he mustn't be nice to them over there because they do bad stuff. So it just got back into the separation. I mean, Constantine saw a vision of the cross as he went into war. And I would say maybe that vision of the cross was telling him not to go to war.
Indeed.
That the upright slant and the cross slant were meeting in the middle. So let's meet in the middle here and see if we can work out what's going on here.
Absolutely.
Because the cross is another version of the Merkaba symbol, which is yes. the cross, you know, the two, the above and below and the right, left and the right meeting in the centre. So you can tell I'm absolutely passionate about pre-Constantine Christianity. And I want to know all about it. And the other thing we've got with this Christianity is Paul's letters. I have written a lot of letters.
Mm-hmm.
I would be really pissed off if somebody put them into a Bible and said, this is how you do it, because it was how I was feeling at the time.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah.
If Paul knew that his letters had been put down into dogma, he'd be horrified.
Yeah.
Well, if he wasn't horrified, then I really shouldn't be reading the letters in the first place. There's great stuff in Paul. Paul is a misunderstood mystic. There's stuff in there which is magical and mysterious and glorious. And he's also trying to control unruly people. Well, and he shouldn't be trying to control people. I know that. But he's actually trying to say to people, that's not the point. So he's telling people who are doing stupid things, this isn't what we're meant to be doing. And of course, he's now been set in stone, and words that he used have been about unnatural sexual practices, which probably meant having anal intercourse. Now, if you want to have anal intercourse, that's absolutely fine, but it's got to be something you've got to be very careful about, because a ruptured anus is fatal.
Wow. I did not know that.
You can interpret the Hebrew thing as a man shall not die with another man as with a woman, for he shall surely die. It's put to death is how it's translated, but it basically means you are in danger of death. And if you rape a child, either way, you can kill that child.
Yeah.
But anal rape is quite frequently fatal.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So, you know, I sort of look at it from, let's look at this from the cultural social observations at the time. And we've got the modern world where women, young girls think that anal sex is the next thing that you have to offer a man. If you want to do it, that's absolutely fine. But think about it. You know, it's not the law.
No, decide whether you like it. So that, yeah, to me, that's the bit where I suspect it's a human thing, and it's back to what we were talking about a few weeks ago about what makes us feel safe. Is this idea of there being rules? Because as a somebody who, I suppose, if I'm anything, I guess I'm a hedge witch / yeah. shamanic practitioner or whatever. The whole point, in a way, with the hedge witch is that there aren't any rules. There are no books. Well, there are nowadays, but when I was young, there weren't really any books telling you how to be a hedge witch. Your conversation was ongoing and personal with the spirits and with the divine. And so the idea that there might be a book of rules was a total and utter anathema.
Mm.
But perhaps it's human nature actually to feel very much safer when there is a book of rules.
I think we do feel safer, because apart from anything else, in the book of rules, you don't really have to think of you for yourself. And all this last year, we've had all this, you can't go somewhere without the vaccination, it's an impingement on your freedom. Well, where do we start with impingements on freedom?
Mm.
Traffic lights?
Yes.
Road tax? MOTs? Yeah. You know, and that's just on the road.
Land ownership?
Yeah. And land ownership is a hideous thing.
Yeah.
But we live by all these rules, and actually we have rules and we have rights, whereas actually everything is a privilege.
Yeah.
Where was I going with this? It comes back to this, our story, my story, the bigger story, which is that as a child, I believe, and I may be wrong, and of course, obviously, I can only speak from my experience and what I've observed, even though I probably didn't have the best childhood in the world, I knew where I was.
How do you mean?
I knew what was forbidden and what wasn't.
Okay, you knew what the rules were.
I knew what the rules were. I knew the time I went to bed.
Yeah.
And my parents then changed the time as I got older. And during my childhood, I broke rules.
Yeah.
And I learned that there were consequences to breaking rules. And I learned more about my parents through those. And my seminal story of this is the time I went ice skating with Elizabeth Thompson on a Saturday night when I'd been forbidden to, because it was much too dangerous for two 14-year-old girls to go ice skating on their own on a Saturday night. That was the view all those years ago.
Yeah.
And I did go ice skating, and Elizabeth confessed to her mother, and her mother rang up my father and told him that I'd disobeyed him and gone. And I was having a snack in the kitchen, and I remember my father opening the hatch between the dining room where the phone was and the kitchen and leaning on it and saying, "That was Mrs. Thompson. I gather you went ice skating on Saturday night." And I sort of cringe, and he said, "I don't like disobedience, but I like sneaking even less. Don't do it again."
Good man.
And the respect I felt for my father.
Yeah.
And, you know, that to me, that was part of my ground rules as I was growing up. Okay, I was 14 by then, but even so, that was incredibly powerful that the law came from my father that sneaking was worse than disobedience. You know, so you get these rules from your parents, and this is why we're in such, one of the reasons why we're in such a mess now, because we don't have these steady rules. No. And you're meant to feel safe in them as a child because the rules protect you. Then you're meant to individuate, which is, I'm not happy with this, I'm not happy that, this is where, what I think.
Your rules suck.
Your rules suck. I'm going to make some new rules, I'm going to get out there, and I'm going to play. And the idea is that then you do what is attributed to the Dalai Lama, but it's probably much over, find out what the rules are so you know how to break them, and which ones need to be broken at which point, and go with the spirit of the rules.
Well, and which ones need to be adhered to because they're good.
Yes, indeed, but you've got to get to the place of Tiferet in Kabbalah, which is your true self, to be able to discern and love. Love the right rules and discern which are the right rules, and discern and love the fact that you have to break some of them.
And so, in which case, what I'm hearing in Tiferet is an attitude much like that of your father, which is that there are rules, but there's also room for you to have your own rules.
So yeah, and there is a greater rule, which is you do not betray.
Okay, but back to Tiferet.
Mm.
So in Judaic mysticism, there's not the... So what seems to be conveyed to me by Christianity and by the place that we started is this idea that you basically are... quite literally, a child of God. Mm. God is going to treat you like a child and
discipline you,
and that you've got to sit down, shut up, do as you're damn well told,
or
you're going to go straight off to hell.
Yeah.
Whereas in Kabbalah, there is room for you to decide what.
It's not just Kabbalah, in any good spiritual tradition. It's actually
Inquiring particularly about Kabbalah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You've got to, at Tiferet, you're in relationship with God. That's the kingdom of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
The kingdom of God is when you experience being one with God.
Mm-hmm.
They're two completely different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And when you experience being one with God, that's the only rule there is. You know, and Jesus does say, love God, love your neighbour as yourself. All other of the commandments are lesser than these. Nothing, no other rule counts more than your connection with the divine and to love your neighbour as yourself. That is the end of the law. But that is the point at which you can act like that. You can be like that. You have got your significant other in the Holy One. Or if you're blessed, the direct experience that the Holy One is in you and you are in the Holy One. And you are absolutely an integral part of this creation. When you get there, the law doesn't matter.
So whose scripture is that written in?
Well, it's in the Gospels. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul and all thy strength and all thy might, and your neighbour yourself. No other commandment is greater than these.
In which gospel do you know?
I know it's in Luke. I believe it's also in Matthew and Mark.
Right. Okay. I'm just intrigued just because that's so, that clearly speaks back to the kind of generosity of personal freedom and thought that's clearly present in...
It's the perfect fulfillment of the Hebrew Testament.
Yeah.
And I don't like calling it the Old Testament because old and new implies that the new is better. We have new and improved nowadays. But the Torah is the giving of the law. It's the building of the container, the building of the base of the Merkabah, if you like.
Mm.
This is how you live in reasonable communion with each other and the planet when you don't know any better for yourself. So, yes, you are children. A lot of the laws are about how you treat animals, how you treat the planet, how you don't take too much.
Then there's also slut shaming and,
yes, there is, but most of those are edited in.
Edited in?
You'd be amazed how many edits there are. And don't forget, until the coming of the Second Temple, there was no Leviticus and no Deuteronomy, which are two of the major books of the law. They didn't exist. And these things were mostly oral tradition. It wasn't all fully written down until after Jesus. But most of it was written down at the time of the Second Temple, which was to suppress the First Temple. So it's all gone horrible rog, as we put it in our house, horrible rog by then. But so the Torah is the giving of the law. The prophets is the questioning of the law and the growing up, the individuation. And then the wisdom books is about the level of working at the soul. And people can't read the book of Job because they haven't got to that level. They just look at it about God being mean to Job. But it's actually all about the personal journey of transformation. And the whole of the message of the wisdom books is not about transactional religion, which the law is, if I do this, you'll love me, to transformational spirituality, which is that my study of this transforms me into somebody who's useful. And God is always transformational when it's real. When it's transactional, it's us putting God in our image.
So what I'm with while you say that is that what's fascinating to me is that images which, for me, have come from direct revelation with spirit, so that I obviously know and understand that the idea of upward-facing triangles, downward-facing triangles, stars of David and hexes are as old as time.
Yeah.
But for me, the meaning implicit in those things is something which has been transmitted to me directly by the spirits. I certainly haven't consciously learnt them from another human being.
Mm.
And yet they are so completely on the same page as these ancient teachings.
Mm.
So where am I trying to go with this? What I don't quite get, and I'm not at all suggesting that you're going to have the answer to this, is that if so much of the ancient teachings and what can clearly be still given now to one Devonian hedge witch under her hedge on the moor,
from a hedge priest under another hedge on the moor.
No, I'm talking about the teachings around the nature of reality and the nature of power given to me by the spirits, is that if our humanness is still so speaking the same kinds of language from the divine, the same shapes, if you like, if nothing else, and the same understandings are still being transmitted now as were being transmitted
then,
which is how long ago? When's the first temple?
2,500 years ago.
2,500 years ago.
Well, it was the end of it, so 3,000 years ago, let's say.
Okay, so in those 3,000 years, clearly our capacity to conceive and comprehend through metaphor hasn't changed significantly.
No.
The same metaphors are clearly being offered.
Yes.
So
why don't we listen?
Yeah, really, I guess. It's not so much why don't we listen, but I'm so mystified by the... by our need as a culture to be given so many harsh rules to kind of just apparently want to live by them. I mean, it's as true now on the political stage as it was when the Second Temple was replacing the First Temple. You know, what is it in us that means that we just seem to want someone else to tell us how to be and what to do?
Yeah.
And we're quite willing, as a culture, it seems, not to even bother to think about that too much.
When my second husband left me, I was very upset. But for quite some time, I thought I had a broken heart. He didn't break my heart, he broke my rule.
What was your rule? I shall not leave Maggie.
Well, my rule was marriages, you know, my rule was we married for better, for worse. We should work through this. My rule is that you stay. My rule is that we get better through this. He broke my rule. Pissed me off. And actually, I think a lot more of us could be that honest.
Yeah?
You broke my rules. You meant to stay with me. So we mistake rules for heart quite often. What's right? And Lion has my husband has a lovely saying. He says, well, are you doing what's right, or are you doing the right thing? They're absolutely different.
Ooh, explain.
Because what's right is what the law says. The right thing is what's right for this absolute moment.
Ooh. I like that.
I like that. I quite like him.
Yes, he seems nice.
He's a stayer. Yeah. He's obeying my rule.
Good man.
It's so much of what we think is our heart is our rule. And coming back to good old Ignatius of Loyola, after Ignatius of Loyola, our rule is that God will love us if we serve him the way we've been taught to serve him.
So only if we're good children.
Yes, that's our rule. And we have all this myth of heaven and hell and all. Heaven is here now.
Mm-hmm.
Or hell so is hell. Here now. Absolutely, yes. So why do we need this rule? Well, it's easier. If we haven't grown, if we're still in the first story, which is the tribal story, the tribe must be protected. That's the egoic point of view.
Yeah.
And the ego needs an enemy. And I've noticed that recently with a friend and acquaintance of mine who's gone through a really difficult emotional time with an ex. And he became the enemy, which was how she could stay sane. But now it seems to be resolved. She's trying to make another enemy. She doesn't know she's doing it.
Mm.
She genuinely can't see that she's making somebody else wrong at the moment. Now, the other person may very well be wrong. I think the other person probably is wrong. Well, whatever, I don't know. But the ego needs an enemy to feel good about itself.
By enemy, you mean something to be in opposition to.
Yes, something to be in opposition. By the You define yourself by what you're not.
Do we all define ourselves
by what we're not? At the ego level, we do. But hopefully we grow. That's the whole point, is that's where we start. Because when you go to school, the first time you go to school when you're 4 or something like that, you're suddenly outside this womb of your family and you start discovering what you are and what you're not according to other people, what your peers say, whether they like you, whether you said the right thing, whether you said the wrong thing. So you're going to start to go back, hopefully go back to the family and go, I don't understand about that, and feel safe there. And you probably make the other person wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if your family isn't beautifully structured, which, let's face it, most families aren't,
mm.
you're not going to go, well, it's okay, they feel differently from you. It's okay that they feel differently. It's not a threat. But unfortunately, the insecure ego goes threat. You don't like me, threat. I don't like you, threat. You do things a different way. It could be a threat. You could take my food away from me. You could take this. And the idea is to go out of it and say, well, I know who I am, so I can see who you are, so I can have a relationship with you or not, or choose.
Mm.
And then you go to the, I will give the who I am and my strength to the greater good. And what we do is we mistake the ego for the soul. And that's where the law comes in. we think that the law comes from the soul, but the soul is always about. And my bishop has this lovely phrase, which he says is Tibetan, which is there are lies and there are bandages for the soul. And that's a soul statement, because the perennial truth, the greater truth, is better than the truth of your law.
Yes.
Well, better, you know, it's completely different from the truth of your law. And I don't know if I'm explaining this in any way that's helpful.
I'm slightly lost on there are lies and there are bandages for the soul.
All right. You're in a shop with your dear friend who's trying on her wedding dress.
Yeah.
And she says to you, does my bum look big in this?
Right.
It's 2 weeks before the wedding and her bum unquestionably looks enormous in that dress to you. That dress that she loves, feels absolutely beautiful in, and is wearing for her wedding. I would say that you say, you look absolutely beautiful and I love your bum in this. You do not say, yes, that dress makes your bum look massive.
Fair enough. Okay. That has what to do with where we were on not needing rules.
Well, maybe the greater rule is...
Oh, be kind, don't necessarily tell the truth.
And that's very much the Hasidic law, which is loving... It's in the Talmud, loving kindness is greater even than truth.
Is that really in the Talmud?
It is.
Hurrah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm sitting here feeling slightly like a kind of pinned rabbit. The version of humanity that you offer in terms of like, this is what the ego does, this is who the ego is. It's just like, if that's all the absolute truth, then we're fucked, because we're going around as these horribly aggressive little...
Well, we're not being encouraged to grow. We're not being encouraged to grow because, and I do this myself, we have a difficult day at work, so we come out and blog out in front of the TV. And drink our alcohol and eat our pizza because we just need that comfort. Because we're living in far too many rules.
Mm.
Are we fucked? Well, yeah. But no.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know whether I see... I see that that version of the ego is true within the context of our culture.
Yes, I mean, I'm always generalising. Your ego in astrology is defined by your moon placing and the relationship between your moon to your ascendant, your Mercury and your Venus. So every person's ego is slightly different.
Mm.
And we all get put in the box of education and the box of this and the box of that. And everybody will react to that in a different way. And some of us, myself included, go into codependency with that. So we appear to be incredibly loving, kind people.
Mm.
But we then will snap or run away or something like that. So some of us in our ego will appear to be incredibly loving and kind, and some of us will appear to be harsh. And according to our blueprint, our biorhythms, our parents, our environment, our this, our that. But as a huge generality, the ego needs an enemy. Because it's a very basic, this is right, this is wrong, this is right, this is wrong way of living. And we're meant to grow out of it.
Mm.
It's always meant to be there. Kabbalah isn't like Buddhism that does tend to say destroy the ego. No, the ego is your vessel. It teaches you where you came from. And why you are how you are.
Well, also, from my perspective, the ego is something that's, if you like, designed to keep you safe.
Yes, in indeed. That
it's the storyteller.
Yes, that's its entire job, is to keep you safe.
Mm.
And safe may mean stop your mother hitting you. So behave in whatever way will stop your mother hitting you or reduce your mother hitting you.
Mm.
So it can get very corrupted very, very soon, because its job is to keep you safe.
Mm. Mm. Well, and also another option is for it to tell you that that's not happening.
So that safety isn't happening?
No, 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 to tell you that your mother's not hitting you.
Oh, yes. Oh, well, that's the whole Gabor Mate. Mm. The blocking out, yes. Mm. And of course, when you block one thing out, if something else, somebody else does something to you in your adult life that is equivalent to the blocking out, you'll block that too.
Yeah.
And in blocking that, you block your immune system. And most of humanity wild generalization. Most of us have blocked off so much in the system because the system basically serves us. We've blocked off what we're doing to the planet
because it feeds exactly. us. Yeah.
We can't see it.
Yeah. And we've blocked it off back to because we're too, in my opinion, we're too comfortable and too afraid of losing that comfort.
Yeah. It's more important to us to have the Deliveroo and the box set. No, we don't have box sets anymore. Streaming. Sorry, I'm showing my age, aren't I? Deliveroo and streaming so I can lose myself and look at somebody else's problems and think mine aren't so bad after all. I mean, what kind of species watches... I had the lead letter in the Radio Times last week.
I saw. Yes, although who is this Meg Dickinson?
That's
woman.
My married name.
Were you really called Meg?
That's what my husband calls me.
This one?
Yeah.
Calls you Meg?
Yes.
Why don't the rest of us call you Meg?
Because I don't want you to.
Oh, fair enough.
I sometimes give permission to some people to call me Meg.
Okay. Cute.
But yes, I wrote under my pseudonym. Yes, I did.
Your pseudonym that's actually your real name.
My real name, yes, absolutely. So I don't know why I wrote as Meg Dickinson. I just did. I have an email address that Meg writes from, and Maggie is my Maggie White, as is sort of my professional name, if you like. Mm. But anyway, I wrote this letter about the TV programme Mr. T, and I probably wrote it under that name because I'm less known under it, because I really wanted to speak out about something, but I was afraid of being judged for it. And I spoke out because... And the letter was severely edited. It's a good edit, but it didn't have the whole essence of what I was trying to say, which is I'm fed up to the back teeth with portraying rape as a means of entertaining people for their evening.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree.
I'm not that happy about murder, frankly.
No, I don't understand why people watch them.
But that's it. We do.
Well,
it's
I don't,
our law.
People do.
The vast majority of us think we deserve to sit down with a lovely meal in front of the TV and watch people killing other people. How can we develop a sane society if we think that's normal?
I know. Well, if we think that's entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it. Apparently, like whodunits, so generally sort of cop shows, if you like, something where something bad happens and someone else has to find out who did it, is the most popular form of TV in this country.
It is. Absolutely. And the darker the better, actually. The cop's got to be deeply flawed as well nowadays. And I admit, I've watched some of these things. I have watched some of these things. I do get entertained by them, but more and more I'm not.
Mm. Well, what I haven't done is I kind of get the psychological aspect of it, I think, and I get the satisfaction of... Mm. Ooh, someone did a thing and I think I know who, and then being right.
Yes.
But I don't get the gore and the violence, and I don't get why it always has to be that a woman was raped or bludgeoned to death or whatever. And more even than that, I fail to see why it's okay to then show us that created in all its ghastly, gory sort of full-onness.
Yeah, somebody... I did post on Facebook, say, has anybody got a copy of the Radio Times? Because apparently I've got the lead letter in it and I haven't got a copy of the Radio Times. And somebody kindly sent me a photograph and people commented on what I'd said. And one woman came along and said, and did they later in the programme have a group of men standing around the naked woman's dead body in the mortuary?
Of course they did.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And, okay, they stand around naked men's bodies in the mortuary too. And they, the silent witness stuff, I'm actually really, really interested in pathology, you know, what kills you, what doesn't, and that kind of thing. But that doesn't mean to say I want to watch this kind of stuff. I increasingly don't. We had the movie Air Force One was on quite recently. I couldn't watch it because I remember seeing it the first time, and there's a bit in which there's a woman begging for mercy who's shot in the head. Now, and actually it turns out in the TV version they don't actually show quite as much as they did in the cinema version. They've edited it down. But it's something that traumatised me all those years ago.
Do you know what? I was about to say exactly that. Why is it that our culture seems to view what is potentially, well, actually, if it was actually happening, it would be profoundly traumatic as entertainment.
Yeah.
That has got to speak to a level of trauma present already in the population.
Yes. Yes.
That can make that okay. Because, yeah, I mean, I can't watch that stuff. I find it traumatising.
Yes.
So does that just mean I'm not as traumatised as the rest of the people who can watch it? Because I'm not inured to that level of violence or
you
something?
You haven't locked out your reaction to the violence. You've made it separate from you.
Yeah.
Whereas my neighbour is myself. I don't want to even watch a depiction of somebody being killed, let alone. And it's also, seeing this on TV has made us, that's why the news is getting worse and worse and worse. Because they're showing us things to excite us and titillate us on the news now, which is encouraging more of it to be.
I don't know, I haven't watched the news for so long.
Well, I don't watch news on telly, but I look at the BBC website and the CNN website once a day. And you can just see that people are avid for these things. What do you click on? You click on the traumatic one.
So back round to people have othered the rest of humanity, which is why they can watch them being gored by way of entertainment, which then leads us back to...
Othering the planet,
yeah. That's fundamentally the state we're in, is the state of separation.
The human ego has me and the other, then my tribe and the other. And the individuated human who's individuated from a vessel that wasn't strong enough will quite often go into fundamentalism because it hasn't got through this thing about the other. But the human soul working at a clear level as a hedge witch like you, and I really do honour you because you do work from that level, is one that does not see other.
Mm. But it's not necessarily an intrinsic human thing to see other.
No.
There are indigenous people, intact cultures in our world who have no concept of the idea of the individual or of other.
Yeah. And we call them primitive.
Yeah. Yeah. Ho, ho.
I think we need to end. We're on 41 minutes. Can we say anything enlightening and helpful? Because it got a bit depressing.
It has got a bit depressing. But you know what? I think this is stuff that's so important to think about. And to think about how does the mistaken view of our separation colour our version of reality is something really worth thinking about.
Cleverly.
Yeah.
So cleverly.
I know it's as trite as hell.
Mm.
The way you do something is the way you do everything. And if you look at your life, any piece of your life, that will be an extraordinary tool in an attempt to change our lives for the better.
Yeah.
Is to look at any small thing and go, okay, how am I doing that? What are the implications of the way I do this?
Yeah. And that's the purpose of a Sabbath. Take a day to do things differently.
Mm.
And I'll make a suggestion of what I do on the Sabbath. I make sure I never watch anything with anything other than love in it if I'm on the television on a Sunday. Sunday is generally my Sabbath, if it possibly can be. Can you take one day a week where you consciously do not embrace violence? Just one. Give it a go. See how it makes you feel.